So this week's game is we're coming up to the 30th anniversary of this week's game. Probably about the time I managed to pull this podcast together, it'll be the 30th anniversary of this particular game. It was another doubleheader against the former Rangers Football Club, where we won. We all seem to do well in those sorts of double and triple header games. And I'm joined again by Anthony Murray to talk about it, because he's done the homework that I haven't. And our special guest this week to talk about this special game is Kevin Schofield. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, Brighton. How are you? Or should I say Harry?
Oh, it doesn't really matter. I've long gone beyond caring as to whether I'm Harry or... Actually, it's quite funny sometimes because people call me both during the course of a podcast. So, yeah, long gone beyond caring. So, this game, Anthony's going to set the scene in a minute. But do you want to give us a wee bit of your scene setting on it?
Yeah, well, the reason I chose the game was because it was my first Celtic Rangers game that I was there in person. I was 16 at the time, and I just thought it was appropriate because with the 30th anniversary coming up in a couple of days, I just thought, yeah, why not? It was, we can maybe go into the details and stuff like that, but I'd never been allowed to go to a Celtic Rangers game by my mum and dad, by my mum mainly, to be honest with you. And I think she must, I mean, this is, I'm guessing, but I think maybe she'd said to me, right, when you turn 16, you can go. And this was probably the first game at Parkhead. I wasn't allowed to go to Ibrox, but the first game at Parkhead after I turned 16, I was allowed to go league game, because we had a season ticket. Because in those days, we used to stand in the jungle, but it was a terracing season ticket, I think. Mm-hmm. So you could stand in the Celtic end as well. But me and my uncle used to go together. And so I'd been going since 89. But we'd always skipped the Rangers games until this one. So that was, I just thought it was quite apt, as I say, as well, with the 30th anniversary.
Is that when you got your first season book, 89?
Aye, they started the 89-90 season. So my dad, he'd gone in like 50s, 60s. He stopped going in the 70s. And I used to go to the odd game, maybe three or four games a season with him and my uncle. And then my uncle had said, why don't me and you get a season ticket? Because he'd seen it advertised in the paper. And it was like £100 or something at that time. We started to go 89-90, which we finished fifth that season. That was probably the worst season of the modern era. And then we got it again for the following season, Gluttons for Punishment. It was marginally better, 90-91, from what I can recall. It wasn't a great time to go. But when you're that age, you don't really mind so much, do you? It's just the thrill of going to the games, I think, as much as anything. But anyway, it was quite a good game to choose.
Your terracing season book thing sums up the old Celtic board to me. They weren't big fans of season books.
Aye, well they were a pain, weren't they, season book holders, because they would ask for stuff.
Yeah.
Which they didn't like very much.
Yeah, this concept of having customers page up front at the beginning of the season, and then were sucked in, even if you finished fifth, you got the money. They didn't like that idea.
And the thing was as well, in those days, I mean, it was great value because you got cup games as well thrown in, League Cup, Scottish Cup, and friendlies. I remember going to the Ajax friendly. It was Tommy Burns' last game. Mm-hmm. And we just got it on the season ticket, on the season book, so we just went up to the game just because we could. Whereas now, obviously, it's league games only. So it was actually quite good value, really, even though the football was pretty rubbish. But actually, you got quite a lot of games for your season book.
That was about the time I started with mine as well, which is why I'm called Harry Brady. The first season book I had was Harry Brady season book in 1988-89. Because couldn't get season books. There was a huge big waiting list for season books. And my mate said, my dad's got to the end of the he's come up in the waiting list. Do you want your season book? And I thought, how can I get your season book if he's just got to the top of the waiting list to have a season book? And then they explained to me that there was only a small number of season books that they had. And so there was this guy, Harry Brady, who, I don't know what had happened to Harry Brady, he probably died like 50 years earlier. And so my mate's dad had been using Harry Brady, care of, blah, 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 blah. So then when he got to the top of the waiting list, he got one in his own name. And I then got Harry Brady season book. So I then had a season book, Harry Brady. This was in the main stand, Harry Brady, care of, blah, blah, blah.
I've always wondered where Harry Brady came from. Now I know.
So there you go. So, Anthony, do you want to set the scene of where we are and ask Kevin about his what films he went to see?
So obviously you're a political journalist, Kevin. What were the hot things that were happening in the world at this time?
Well, 1991, go wait to think. I mean, I was 16, so I guess I wasn't terribly politically engaged. I mean, it was a year before the 92 election. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, from what I recall growing up, there was never really, independence was kind of seen as a real fringe interest, whereas obviously that's not the case anymore. So it was a different world then, 30 years ago, really. I mean, what you're looking at, a couple of years since the Berlin Wall had come down. It was just a completely different time. There was no Scottish Parliament. God, it makes me feel really old when you think about it. But it's just, Scotland was just a completely different place. And Scottish football as well was, all right, Rangers were, what were we going for, 3 in a row that season? But it was still pretty competitive. And Aberdeen nearly won the league that year. And even though we weren't competing, but other teams like Aberdeen at that time were able to compete with Rangers because the financial gap wasn't as big as it is now. So, trying to think who else. So, well, George Bush would have been in. George was senior.
Yes.
Would have still been the president. That really makes me feel, God almighty, we've been through his son since then. Jesus. Maggie Thatcher would. Oh no, no, she went in 1990, didn't she? So it would have been John Major would have been Prime Minister. And as I say, probably Labour, I'm guessing, were probably ahead in the polls because everyone thought 1992 was when Labour were finally going to win an election. Obviously, that didn't happen. So that's pretty much what I remember politics-wise. But like I say, I was 16, I was in fifth year at the school, so I was maybe my political interest wasn't quite as intense as it was in later years.
Right, I've done the research because obviously I was only 9 years old when this game was played. But I've gone and done a bit of research. You're right, the first Gulf War is fizzling out. You know, the Americans are saying we've won, Saddam's admitting we've lost. We never hear from him again. Ayrton Senna wins the Brazilian Grand Prix for the first time. 3 days before the game, a Frenchman called Antoine Griezmann, who goes on to win a World Cup, is born. Bit of news. Leo Fender from Fender Guitars dies that week. There's one thing that'll jump out at people. Remember at Christmas time, I don't know, in my house, Dad used to buy the TV Times and the Radio Times.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
To get both all the channels, because this is the month that monopoly expires. So for the first time ever, you would only have to buy the Radio Times or the TV Times this March 1991. That is a big thing for people in Britain at this time.
That must have been one of the things that transformed the newspaper industry, Kevin, because suddenly the newspapers, that would have probably coincided with the newspapers doing their weekend supplements when they start doing loads of TV stuff.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, well, because Radio Times at that time was just the BBC.
Yeah.
It wasn't such a BBC One, which was only two, BBC One, BBC Two. God almighty, I sound like my dad talking about stuff like this, you know, when we only had 4 channels, and I mean, you know, in those days, which was true, before Channel 5, there was literally 4 stations, as we called them, really, on the telly in those days, and the TV Times was the ITV version, wasn't it?
And also on this day, Sergei Bubka breaks the world pole vaulting record. I think everyone remembers old Sergei.
I remember Bubka, yeah.
Moving on, you said you've done a little bit of research into movies that were out last week.
Well, the number one was it Green Card, I think, according to my research anyway. It was 21st of March, according to Wikipedia, the 21st of March 1991, the top box office movie was Green Card, which was Gerard Depardieu and Andy McDowell, a romantic comedy. And then the week after, the 28th, was Look Who's Talking To.
Yeah. That's the one I had written down.
Yeah, that was an aye. So what was that? John Travolta? Was that John? No, wasn't it John Travolta? Was it?
John Travolta and
Ted Danson.
Ted Danson.
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck.
No, it was the guy who Die Hard did one of the voices.
Oh, did he not do the baby voice?
Yes, or something like
Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a classic. Younger listeners, no. don't look for it. Another film that was big in Britain that week was a film called American Friends, which was written, produced and directed by Michael Palin. But I've never heard of it. So despite having a Monty Python involved, it disappeared from memory, apparently. And the following night...
I'm currently looking up IMDb to try and find out what American Friends was.
But literally, the night after the game, or two nights after the game, Dances with Wolves wins the Oscar. So that is a film that has probably stood the test of time as a relatively good film.
That was huge. Kevin Costner, he was massive at the time, yeah. Which was news for Kevins everywhere, you know.
I think that was the last film I saw at the ABC in Sucky Hall Street. That's now the O2 Academy, and that's now burned down. That was huge. That was an enormous cinema. It was absolutely enormous. You don't get cinemas like that. Making Friends, yeah, I'm looking at it just now. Have no recollection of it whatsoever. Yeah.
Much more interesting than the movies is the music. Kevin, you said you'd looked into the music.
Yeah, but again, it's a bit naff, really. The number,
is it?
Number one.
I mean, last week we did the game from 2011. And it was just that I'm just staring at it blankly, like, oh, how am I going to pretend I've heard of this? Whereas I look at this, you know, so when I was 29 years old, did not make an impact on me. When I was 9 years old, I'm looking at this list like they're all classics.
So Chesney Hawks was number one with The One and Only.
That's the following week. Yeah.
Oh, really? I've got. Again,
well, I think that's the Sunday of the weekend. Yeah.
Aye. So that night, basically. Yeah. On the Sunday. Yeah. What was it the week before?
Stonk by Halen Pace.
Hey, Halen Pace. That was a comic relief song, which is now that later that night had fallen to number two. Yeah. Still the number two selling record that week was the Stonk. God, I do remember that actually. Right, go on then, because you're looking at a different week from me.
Well, the Clash's "Should I Stay or Should I Go" has been re-released after being involved in a Levi's advert.
That's right, yeah.
So it is in the top 10. It's hovering about. My favourite, Do the Bartman, the Simpsons rap, which I'm sure if I went back and revisited, isn't as good as I remembered. although I was definitely fond of it at the time.
Well, it was definitely aimed at your age group.
Yeah. Chesney Hawks is moving up the charts because it's a time when, a song could actually pick up momentum and go up the way rather than just coming straight in at number one and then falling down, which is, I guess, what it kind of comes. Roxette's Joyride is a classic. But probably the pick of the top five is Rod Stewart, The Rhythm of My Heart, which is a song that I loved at the time and had not revisited until earlier today when I went back to watch it. And it's definitely worth revisiting for its video. Because it's got bagpipes, it's got that Celtic-ness to it. It's obviously Rod Stewart, so we should like it. But then there's a sort of 4-minute episode of Band of Brothers. I didn't realise the video for this sort of love song is a World War II epic.
Oh, really?
The best thing about it, in the lyrics, he mentions a helicopter. So despite the fact that this entire video is designed around looking like World War II, it has all these Vietnam War era helicopters flying around. And so no creative director has said, oh, come on, Rod, pick one. Is it the Vietnam War or is it World War II? We're going to look stupid if we go with both. And they do.
It climbed to number three by the following week. So it picked up pace.
Do you know, it shows our age here because I had a glance at the number ones of that year and I thought, what a shite year 1991 was. So...
Yeah, it wasn't a classic. In the early 90s wasn't great, certainly not for British music, really.
Oh. But you remember them. They're all songs that we'd place you in 1991.
Yeah, that's true. I was into it. At that time, I was more sort of indie, Manchester type of Stone Roses. But even then, Stone Roses album came out in 89, so even then it was quite old, really.
Yeah. There was a hiatus. I remember 91, 92, thinking to myself, my God, early 20s, and I don't want to listen to Radio 1 because it's shite. And then 94, bang.
You're an old fogey. A young fogey.
Bang, Oasis come out, and then everything changed for about 5-6 years, 4-5 years in music. So,
God, God, we sound just like Celtic Daz, really, don't we?
We do.
Better in the 1990s, kids.
Yeah, when we finished fifth. Yeah, don't you dare come out of a stadium and say that's the worst performance ever, because I saw us finish fifth in 1989.
We were rubbish, but we were happy. That was the main thing. Got to remember that.
So, into the game. Have you watched the game back, Kevin? You've watched it, Anthony.
Well, yeah, I did. I did watch it back because some kind soul has put the whole thing on YouTube. And what the other thing that strikes me is that is almost the forgotten game, because the one the week before is the one everybody remembers, with the St. Patrick's Day massacre with four sendings off and everything like that. And that is the one that everyone, when you think back to that week, I guess, out of the two games, that's the one, even though we didn't beat them as comfortably as we did the following week, that is just the one that people remember. I think maybe because as well, that there was more riding on that game, because it was basically to save our season. You know, the league was gone. It was a chance to knock Rangers at the Cup, the only trophy that we could win that season. So that's the one people remember. But obviously the following week means more to me, because it was the first Rangers game I'd been to, and it was a great result. But yeah, it was a... The other thing as well, and I did check it on Celtic Wiki, and it was, as I'd remember, we'd been on a great run from about New Year, lost the New Year's game against Rangers, and after that we went on a really good run, clean sheets, victories, and we kind of peaked at this game we're going to talk about. That was the kind of, and then it all went downhill again after that, but we were on a really good run at that time. The team was playing well. McNeil had got a sort of defensive formation that was obviously working well because there's so many clean sheets. Big Paul Elliott was playing, Dovcik was kind of playing the sweeper role. And yes, I say, the season peaked at that moment. Sadly, it still had another 2 months to go and it was all downhill for there. But it was, but anyway, it was still a very enjoyable experience for me.
To give youngsters some context, you're saying about we're on a good run because we were winning games. From the start of October to the end of January, we had won four league games prior to that. So
almost as bad as this season.
Well, it certainly not turns round to this season and says, hold my pint. it's a wee bit different to that. I mean, just makes this season look like we've been from world beaters. We then, at the end of January, we go on this run of which culminates in this game. So, do you have any memories of this time, Anthony?
You mentioned the previous game. I was always aware that we had these two games where we beat them back to back, and my dad was chuffed to bits. And the one that leaps out at me is the Jerry Craney goal in the first game, because there was something about that volley, you know, as it pops over his sort of shoulder and he hits it on the sort of almost on the jump, and he spins it into the far corner. That goal aesthetically made me a football fan as much as any goal that was ever scored. I loved that goal. I loved watching it back. I knew what it meant. And it made me believe that Jerry Craney was probably much better than he probably ever was.
That was a great goal. Great goal.
It really was a fantastic goal. So I wasn't sure before this exercise which game that goal was scored in. So it was in the first one. The weird thing is, I'm watching it through eyes of my dad's prejudices. You know, your dad has favourite players and less than favourite players. You know, this starting 11 is Bonner, Rogan, Coyne are three guys that my dad just did not rate. So it's funny to go back and watch a 90 minutes, you know, and just see, right, why did he not rate them, or were they better than he thought? And I actually come away thinking, you know, Tommy Coyne was better than my dad ever thought he was. Maybe he wasn't the greatest Celtic striker ever, but he had touches.
Oh, he was very good. Tommy Coyne was a very, very clever player. I think we let him go too early. Liam Brady let him go after signing Cascarino. I mean, and then he went on to have a good... He went on and played in the World Cup for Ireland after we let him go.
Yeah.
That was a big mistake. I liked Tommy Coyne. But you're right, though, your dad isn't that unusual, because I don't know if you have this recollection, Brian, as well, that the fans didn't really warm to Tommy Coyne. It took him a while. He didn't get a game at first, and he didn't score many goals, and it took him maybe a year or two before he actually became a regular, and then he scored a lot of goals for Celtic, a lot of important goals.
He'd been scoring goals for Dundee, and it was at a time when Rangers obviously were signing the England goalkeeper, the England captain, England centre midfield players, and we go and sign Tommy Coyne from Dundee. So there was the element of, we're signing shite guys from Scotland, that sort of thing. And so when he comes in the team...
Which was really unfair, because him and Keith Wright at Dundee were a really good partnership.
They were scoring, from memory, they had the season before, him and Keith Wright scored like 40 goals between them for Dundee.
Oh, aye, just, no, that's right.
But I then think...
He came in as well, if my memory serves me right, he came in just as McAvennie was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fans were kind of like, well, that's a bit of a downgrade, you know, because McAvennie...
What, Celtic fans complaining that we're downgrading when we...
You know, hard to believe, really.
But I always felt he's then problem was compounded. He doesn't hit the ground running. And at times I always felt, I used to joke that he would find a marker. You know, he'd be in... you'd look across Tommy Coyne, you know, in terms of how much... He was not enjoying playing for Celtic, perhaps, when the fans were on his back. We'd pick up the ball and you think, oh, Tommy Coyne's in space. And then you'd see him run towards the defender and suddenly be holding on the defender. Oh, he's marked. Can't he pass to Tommy Coyne? So, yeah.
And I guess I kind of remember the slightly fatter Tommy Coyne at Motherwell years later, who, again, showed moments of class, but always looked slightly heavy. And this Tommy Coyne's kind of lean and big.
Yeah.
He's more athletic. So,
he was just a very cultured player, actually. Good football intelligence. And I'm sure he was with Motherwell when he went to the World Cup with Ireland. I'm sure he was. And I'm sure he also scored to knock us out of the Cup when he was at Motherwell. So he got his revenge, as so often happens with Celtic. We sell players and they come back to haunt us. But, yeah, I liked Tommy Coyne. He was a good player. And at that time, the game we're talking about, he was in a really rich vein of form. He was our main striker.
So I set off watching this entire game on YouTube, and my plan was, right, I'll scribble out the formation. So I kind of preempted it in my head. I was like, oh, it'll be 4-4-2. That was my stupid assumption. Mm. And then I'm scribbling names down as I see them. I'm like, oh, there's he. He's there. He's there. He's there. And I get to this point where I've got 10 players. And I cannot work out who the 11th is because he's just not in the game. And then Anton Rogan scores. Like, all right, he's the 11th. And at that point, I'm like, well, then Derek White's not at left back. And I'm having to play chess with my team because I'm like, I don't know where anyone is now because I'm confused. So I don't really know what the actual formation was, because if it was 4 at the back, which I don't think it was now,
no.
I've no idea where Derek White was playing. And if it was 3 at the back or 5 at the back, I still don't know where Derek White was playing, because he just wasn't in the game, really.
Yeah, well, it was. I just remember at the time it was, I think, because Dovcik was signed as a left back, but he was a really another cultured player, great left foot as we all know, but he was a really really clever, good footballer, and Billy McNeil played him. I don't know how it came about, but anyway, he ended up playing at sweeper behind Elliot and White, and you had Rogan on the left, and I think in this game it's Mark McNally.
Yes.
It would normally have been Chris Morris.
So what age would McNally have been in this game?
Oh, young player.
Young.
Late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, about that age,
And it's Anton Rogan's 25th birthday.
Was it?
It's literally his birthday. That's all the headlines on the Celtic Wiki. They all lean into that heavily.
Yeah. It was a great day for Anton.
And then you've got Joe Miller down the right, Collins and McStay in midfield, Coyne and Craney up front, and Bonner. A Bonner who has a great game. You know, he comes and catches everything.
Aye.
Wow.
There's one in the second half that he misses that Spencer gets cleared off the line.
Yes.
But other than that, but he has a great save from Goff in the first half.
Yes.
Or 1-0 at a time, and Goff wins a header and corner. It's going right in the corner of the goal, and Packie gets down and saves it. He did have a good game. He did have a good game. One thing you do notice about these games as well is how many times goalies kick for hand, which you never really see these days. They're just hoofing it up the park.
Yeah, it's surreal watch. When the pass back rule exists,
yeah.
How did any team that ever managed to get a 2-0 lead and the pass back rule existed ever blow that 2-0 lead.
No.
I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah. You think just, or the rest of the game, you just tap it back to the goalie. It's just killed time.
It is like watching a different sport.
That was the point, the very point I was going to make. Whereas now, I don't know if it's Guardiola changed it or whatever, but it's just everyone's on the ground now. Whereas in the amount of aerial battles, I mean, God forbid, in years to come, these players could well have real problems because the amount of time the ball is in the air and it's just heading it back and forth, it's just unrecognisable for the way that they play football now.
I think some credit has to then go to Tommy Burns in the sense that, five years later, if you go back and watch Celtic games from 95, 96, Tommy Burns' team is playing proper football.
Oh, aye, yeah.
At least domestically. We're pinging the ball around and we're really, really quite good. So the time jump from there to then is significant. But this game is a proper old Glasgow derby where you're lucky if you have one nice touch, then you're either getting fouled or making a poor choice with the second one.
Well, also it doesn't help that the park is a midden as well. And I mean, again, it's unrecognisable. They play on like bowling greens now compared to, the centre of the park, right up the middle, is just, there's hardly a blade of grass and it's all rutted and the ball's bouncing all over the place. I mean, and McStay has a brilliant game in this game, and it really makes you appreciate what a great player Paul McStay was, because in that, to be able to get the ball down when it's like that underfoot and play passes, and it's, Jesus, what skill, you know?
They are, yeah, it is Dovcek's left foot, Collins' left foot and McStay that stand out as the tiny moments of brilliance in a hectic football match. Oh. And I'd probably say at the Huns' end, you see the quality of a player like John Spencer, who actually was technically, a good footballer. I think he was quite young at the time.
Yeah.
He has some nice touches. But the rest of the Huns...
John Spencer would have been 20 at the time.
Well, he went on to play for Chelsea, didn't he? He had a good career.
Yeah, of course.
Down in England.
He was in my class at school, but he was sort of 6 months younger than me, so that's how I know exactly what he'd spend, he would have been. Aye, yeah.
There you go. That's the other thing as well, obviously, because Rangers have got so many players sent off the week before, their team was very much changed for the 7 days previously. So he ended up with David Dodds playing at centre-half, which was... He had an absolute shocker of a game. Coyne just had him on toast.
So talk us through the game, Anthony. You've watched it. Talk us through this fantastic. Anton Rogan is Brendan Rodgers' son is named after Anton Rogan.
Well, if you believe Brendan. we've only got Brendan's word for that, so we'll have to take it at face value.
So the game starts. It's here, there and everywhere. Oddly, the pattern emerges that all of Rangers' crosses come down their right and all of our crosses come down our right. So Joe Miller actually starts the game really well. 15 yep. minutes in, you'd think, this is a Joe Miller masterclass. But to be honest, 30 minutes later, he's faded out of the match, just been kicked out of the match like most other players. So everything Rangers do comes down. It's a very lopsided game. I think Rogan's goal comes from a corner or a long throw. I think it's a corner, isn't it? Either it gets saved or not flicked on. And
it gets a header up in the air and Woods goes to catch it. And I think it's Tommy Coyne's in front. And Woods completely misjudges it and he doesn't catch it and he lets it bounce. And there's Anton. Boom. 1-0. Which was great because Anton had always had a nightmare against Rangers. I think he'd given away a penalty, I think, the previous season. I seem to remember at Ibrox, and I think he maybe scored an own goal for them as well. So it was great, poetic justice.
I think the commentator's Jerry McNee, and he does seem to lean into the, poor Anton's not had the best of times against this mob, but he's having his moment now. And he buries it. He dispatches the chance brilliantly at the Rangers' end and celebrates it. So that's good. And then it just, it is a toil to watch. Like I say, I'd say their goalkeeper's much, Bonner's much busier than Woods.
Aye, that's my recollection from the time as well, that I think we were really confident going into this game because we knew that Rangers would have all these players suspended. We'd just beaten them. But actually, Rangers, although they had a makeshift team, they actually played reasonably well. And the final score doesn't suggest that, but they actually didn't play that badly. And they had their chances, certainly at 1-0, to get back into it.
Like I was saying about Coyne, you know, like Collins and McStay, Coyne has the odd nice touch. But it's always, you know, you're not going to get two nice touches near Richard Gough because he's going to kick you in the waist or throw an elbow. So in the same way that Coyne does his best to flip it to the Huns, you know, McCoist has his little moments. Mo Johnson has his little moments. And like I said, Spencer, you know, occasionally looks quite good. But ultimately, it's a kicking match.
Oh, aye. There's not much football, really. I'm biased obviously, but what football there is, certainly McStay, I think has a great game, you know, and it's often happened against Rangers. Paul used to raise his game a lot against Rangers.
One of the real mysteries of the game is bearing in mind I come from that slightly younger stage where I only remember John Collins as a free kick expert. You know what I mean? An absolute as good as you get ball deliverer. And the policy seems to be in this game, if you get a free kick in your rough neck of the woods, you're hitting it. So despite the fact you've got John Collins on the pitch, you've got Derek White pumping one in a box, you've got Rogan pumping one in, everyone's having a shot. It's like there was no designated, oh wait, John, you're better at this than everyone else. How's about you do that?
It was a different time. I don't think there was as much planning into how teams played. Certainly my recollection of going to see Celtic at that time, they didn't play like there was a lot of planning had gone into them taking the field. There was a lot of making up as you go along.
I remember hearing an interview with Murdo McLeod actually when he was talking about it's not that far on. That Venglos is at Celtic, that Wim Jansen and Murdo McLeod are at Celtic, but the transformation in football in that period from the early 90s to the late 90s, you know, that's when it goes through a transformation of being a different sport. During that time. I remember Murdo McLeod talking about when he was at Celtic under Billy McNeil, never once in his time at Celtic did he get told how the opposition would play, who to look out for in the opposition. He said playing like elite European teams, and then he goes to Germany for Dortmund, and he could not believe that they're sitting down and they're talking about systems and designating who'll take throw-ins here, who'll take free kicks there, and that had never ever happened in his professional career up to that point. So,
and we wonder why we went backwards in Europe.
It might also explain why, because that was the other difference about when Rangers were really shite in the last, when the new Rangers were really shite in the last few years. And I remember talking, even on the podcast, about the fact that we just kept beating them in recent times was really unusual, because even when we were shite finishing fifth, we still had a double header like this where we beat them twice. Their ability to lay a glove on us up until the last 18 months, it's quite remarkable when you compare the gulf between our two teams back then, when they were running away and pushing, trying to go for European glory, and we were nowhere.
No, you're right. Yeah, I mean, we actually had some good results against very good Rangers teams in those days. You know, even the season when they nearly got to the final of the Europa Champions League, we beat them. Andy Payton scored. I mean, it was amazing, really.
Yeah.
You're right, comparing it to the results we had against them when Rodgers was the manager and stuff, you just couldn't get names.
The other thing, St Patrick's Day Massacre, this game, the game we did last week with Anthony, the other common thing that comes through, see when Rangers are getting beat, they don't like it up them. They get sent off. When Rangers are getting beat, they are really bad losers and go around and start kicking people and getting sent off.
Well, the sending off in this game was a bit of a strange one. So the other thing was, I do recall a lot of, I don't know, maybe it might be not the view, or there was a lot of Celtic fans had red cards with them that day, and I don't know where they'd come from. And there was almost an expectation that Rangers will get a player sent off today because they got three sent off the week before. And Nisbet gets sent off in this game in the second half. And when you see it, it would definitely be a red card now because it's a horrific tackle on McStay. Catches him really late. But it was quite unusual at that time because players used to get, you know, they were allowed to basically have a few bad challenges before they'd maybe get booked and then get away with a few more. And they'd really need to, you know, almost pull out a gun and shoot somebody before they got sent off. Whereas Nisbet, I think, and he says it, you watch him when after he gets sent off, he's gone, it's my first one. He just booming. And nobody could really believe it, or we were enjoying it, obviously. And he gets sent off. And after that, that's when Rangers start to lose the plot a wee bit. And I think if he'd wanted to, the referee might have even sent off one or two more. But he was probably thinking, oh, we can't have a complete repeat of the week before. But you're right, at that point, I think it was 2-0 by then. And Rangers had, they're just gone. They were just gone room, just kicking Celtic players.
Yeah, there's Ian Ferguson has an absolute assault on John Collins. You know, like a proper modern day red card every
day. There's one as well, Goff, who's been booked and goes over the ball on coin and like stamps on his ankle. Nothing happens. Away you go now, Richard. Now, don't you be doing that again, type of thing, you know?
But the other thing with Goff is, there's, I mean, Coyne and him are clearly going, you know, elbow to elbow winding each other up. But every time it ends with Goff throwing an arm, you know, not necessarily an elbow in the pus, but an arm in the neck, an arm in the chest, you know, just a thrown arm. Mm. And he literally could have got, I scribbled down 6 yellow cards easily. Even in the standards of the time, I'd say.
Yeah. I don't think Richard Goff ever got sent off for Rangers. I might be wrong, but I don't remember him being sent off. But my recollection was he would always get booked, and then that would be it. He would kind of get given card. Well, maybe that's my memory playing tricks with me, but I don't remember him ever getting sent off. But he definitely could have been sent off that day, definitely.
One observation I'd have, both Goff and Coyne are kind of rocking the same kind of ginger mullet.
Yes.
But, yeah. And I'd never noticed this before, but I think, you know, in shampoo adverts, you'd hear the word volume. And I think Coyne must have bought nicer shampoo because his has got a bit more volume.
A bounce.
Yeah, there's a little bit more air in there. He looks better than Goff does anyway. And what I quite like is I think Ian St. John is the co-commentator.
That's right, yeah.
And he's basically shits all over Goff. He's like, oh, he's for a guy who's so good in attacking corners. He's rubbish at the back. You know, he really doesn't rate him. He clearly doesn't rate him as a top central defender defensively.
Yeah.
So he heaps this praise on him, then shits on him.
He is helped, though, by the fact he's playing next to Dodds, who is like a joke centre-half. So he makes Goff look like Baresi in that game, you know. I don't know why David Dodds played. I don't remember him being a centre-half, but as soon as played him at centre-half that day, and he was just... Abysmal.
Dodds is rocking a moustache that must be one of the worst choices in the history of football.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is he thinking?
Yeah. The guy was just, he had a bit of a nightmare that day.
Anyway, we get to the second half and Celtic get a second goal through, you tell me, Kevin.
Joe Miller.
Do you want to describe it?
Yeah. So Anton launches another howitzer up the park. I mean, again, there's very little, play through the midfield in those days. It was just, he gets the ball and he blutters it up the park and it's right down the middle. And Dodds looks like he's got it under control, but he makes a complete hash of it. And Coyne sort of muscles him off the ball. And Coyne goes through one-on-one against Chris Woods. He goes round him, but he takes it too far. He keeps it in on the byline, cuts it back across, and there's wee Joe comes in and sticks it in the back of the net. And that was quite early in the second half, I think, from memory. And I think at that point we kind of knew that it was all going to be okay.
So whereabouts were you watching the game? You said you had your terrace and season books. Whereabouts were you and your... Was it your uncle you said you were with?
Me and my uncle. And I thought my one of my best mates was with me, but I texted him today and he said he wasn't there, but I'm sure he was. But anyway, definitely me and my uncle. And we used to stand always at the same bit in the jungle at the towards the Celtic end. And you know the, how would you describe them? You know the bits where the guys could go underneath, like down towards the toilet?
Uh-huh.
And that. So, you know the, how would you describe them? The bits above that. So there was no one in front of you. Basically, you were at the wall and you could look down on the bit where the guys were walking underneath, if you see what I mean. I don't know how you would describe it. It was like a kind of wall. And it made sure that there was never anybody in front of you. So you had a great view. So we usually used to get there reasonably early from memory. And we'd all stand there at the same spot every game. So that's where we were. So we were at the right end for the second half, the two goals in the second half. We were kind of in line with where wee Joe stuck it in. And then later on, Coyne got his goal.
It's a really satisfying goal to watch back even now, because there's, you know, I don't know, I can't remember how the goals are scored, and you think he's rounded the keeper and you think he might slot it, but then he takes it too far. You think, oh, the chance is gone. But he picks out Miller, who's coming in really brave, you know, just banging into two Hun defenders, just getting there first. You know, the determination to score that goal is really satisfying.
It's wee Joe again. I almost thought Miller was a really kind of streaky player with Celtic. He would go on a run of good games where he'd score, he'd create maybe half a dozen, seven, eight games, and then he'd vanish for a couple of months. But at that time, he was really on his game, and I thought he had quite a good game that day. But yeah, he scored. It was a good goal. And like I say, once we were up to nothing, we kind of knew that Rangers weren't going to come back after that.
And then the third goal that closes it out is Tommy Coyne's goal. It's a cross by, I think it is Joe Miller, isn't it, down the right?
I think it is. Joe Miller, I think, cuts it back to, might have been Paul McStay, and he clips it in first time, and Coyne, again, I think it might have been Dodds, who's trying to mark him, and he just gets up above him and buries it for about 6 yards, and that was it. It was party time after that. It was great. And what other things? Well, it was a beautiful sunny day as well. It was just perfect. It was just a great day.
Yeah, that was in the 85th minute, and it really is. It's a textbook header straight down, you know, aye, towards the keeper's feet, and you know, no chance. It does say it's his 14th goal in 22 games. So he had started relatively prolifically. That, you know, that's not a bad return.
Oh, yeah. And he had the season, was it Liam Brady's first season, the season after? And I think that was the season him, Craney and Charlie and Nicholas all scored 20 goals each. Which is pretty good going, really, to have three players scoring 20-odd goals. But I like Tommy Coyne.
A thing that I'm extremely jealous of, and I think this is probably exaggerated by the fact that, you know, we've just spent a year watching games without sound or you know, without a crowd. Mm. So to go from a game without a crowd or games without a crowd to watching this is polar opposites, and it's just so brilliant to listen to. You know, just the, you know, I get issues with the, you know, the sort of Green Brigade soundtrack, you know, the England Great Escape backing track, just utter din. So to hear a game with a really organic, authentic, brilliant song list, like the speed at which Celtic start singing songs, like literally we score a goal and within a second the whole stadium's going easy, easy, easy. It's so quick. Chrissy, drop the ball. Chrissy, drop the ball. I can't believe how quick so many people are singing the same song.
Well, that was before singing sections, wasn't it? Where you needed a singing section to get the crowd going. But it was that bit. The thing is, it was right in the middle of the jungle, was where all the singing used to start. And it was right above, right below the TV cameras as well, was the gantry. Remember that, Brian? The gantry hanging for the jungle roof. And so the microphones are picking it all up. And you're right, I mean, you're watching the game yesterday, and it doesn't feel like a Celtic Rangers game, does it? Just because there's no crowd. It's like you lose that edge.
I was speaking to someone today who was talking about the game yesterday being a bit bland, and I said, well, was it bland? Or actually, is it the famous Jock Stein thing of, you could have the greatest game in the world, if you've got no fans there, it doesn't feel like it.
It is like that.
Are a lot of games like that, and you just don't notice it, because the atmosphere of a Celtic Rangers game then transforms every, like, Edward shot that McGregor palms away. Can you imagine the atmosphere in the stadium straight after that? You know,
well, and that's the thing is as well, is, you know, the players would then get a lift from it as well, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not making excuses. We've been rotten this season, but I think that's definitely been a factor, probably a small factor, but it's been a factor. You didn't have the fans behind you cheering you on.
I actually think the lack of fans, to digress on to the current season briefly, I think the lack of fans has had a bigger impact on Rangers by not getting on their backs. Last season, Tavernier said that the problem was they couldn't cope with the pressure. Can you imagine? They were playing Kilmarnock a couple of months ago, and it was 1-0 with 10 minutes to go. That's the game that they dropped points at last season, because the Bears are starting to get on their back because they're all uptight and all nervous. I reckon their unbeaten run in the league is largely contributed by lack of supporters giving them a hard time, getting on their back, putting pressure on them.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, although in saying that, would you not think that the Celtic, certainly this season, the fans would have been on our backs as well with you know, going for the 10 in a row and the performance has been rotten? I don't think the fans would have been...
No, it'd have been very different, but... But you're right, Anthony, about the... It is, when you're watching it on the telly, it just reminds you why you can't wait to get back inside grounds.
No, but then you wonder how long it'll be before we get full capacity, and hopefully no long. Soon, I hope. Definitely makes a big difference.
So what would you have done at the final whistle? What would you and your uncle and your pal... Maybe your pal... Maybe you get separated in the melee. That's how he doesn't remember it.
Well, we probably waited. We usually waited, like a big game like that, we'd wait until the crowds had gone a wee bit before we started, rather than going out. But then again, a big result like that, the fans don't want to leave. So we'd have been there for a good 5-10 minutes, I would have thought, after the final whistle. Just drinking it in, you know, just giving it the big yee-ha. And it was great. And like I said, that at that time we thought, oh man, this team's really going places now, finally, you know. But then the next game, and I don't remember this, but the looking at Celtic Wiki, the next game at home at Motherwell, we go beat 2-1. And that was, I mean, that was Celtic at that time, you know. It was just, you never knew really what you were going to get, you know. And the whole season just, I mean, we didn't win the cup, we got beat off Motherwell in the semi-final of the cup, and it was just, so that was the high point of the season, but that week basically beating Rangers twice.
I got absolutely drenched at Hampden.
Me too.
In the cup. Yeah.
That was at both of the games.
Yeah.
And we got soaked. Certainly the second time, got absolutely soaked. Oh, and beat 4-2. Oh God Almighty.
It was absolutely horrendous. Do you know, for some reason, the replay, there was me, my brother, and my future sister-in-law, who's not from a particularly Celtic sporting family. It was the three of us were at it for some reason. I just remember getting soaked. It was just awful. It was just really
soaked,
awful.
Soaked to the skin. I don't get stopped raining all night. Soaked to the skin. Anyway.
Yeah, so... So any other... I mean, that was your first Celtic Rangers game, so any particular thoughts on it?
Well, like I mean, I was really lucky because, you know, as you remember yourself, at that time... after the centenary season, Rangers had the whip hand, you know. I think that was their first league win over them in a couple of years.
Two and a half years,
and it was it was probably a good while before we beat them again in the league, actually, you know. It was, so I was lucky really to pick that game as my first one, because there was plenty of other games at that time playing Rangers when we got beat, home and away, it didn't really matter. So it was fantastic. It was brilliant. I remember going into school the next day and just high as a kite, talking about it with your mates. Oh, you see the game, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, what a thrill it was, you know. But, like I say, very quickly, the season just fizzled out. So that euphoria didn't last very long. And you think about it now, I mean, 91 now, was another 4 years before we even won another trophy. Another 7 years before we won the league again. And you could never have foreseen the success that we've had in the last 20 years, really, at that time. It was just seemed so far away. But, I mean, you know, within 3 years, we were nearly gone bust. Then had Fergus going in to save us 3 years later. A remarkable time, really, when you think back on it. It was quite astonishing what the club went through But so moments like that meant a lot more at that time, just because they were so rare. Beating Rangers was a huge, huge deal at that time. When that was probably the highlight of the season, really, because we weren't actually winning any trophies.
That was when during that period, that was your winning of trophies, was beating them.
It was like winning a trophy. It was, I mean, as sad as it is to admit that, you know, it is true. It was. And then the only other thing, that season as well, went to the last game of the season, them in Aberdeen. And you were obviously hoping that Aberdeen would do it. This is, but even that turned to dust and they just won that day. So it just seemed like a thoroughly miserable time. Bank, was that not the summer? Like, did Big Billy not get the sack that summer?
Oh yeah, I think Big Billy went, yeah, that summer.
And yeah, it was just all really grim, really.
You get any specific things that we pulled out from that, from watching it, Anthony, apart from we were all on terraces?
One of the things that jumps out is just the, you know, the no numbers on a Celtic shirt just looks so good.
Yeah, numbers, you know, on the just cool.
Brilliant,
yeah.
The hoops, you know, just, yeah. It's so unique and it looks class, and it's a shame that, you know, we had to do away with it. The only other thing I noticed, I saw a lot of adverts for Rukinor, the sport brand Rukinor was advertised heavily, which only jumps out because I remember around this time I got my first ever pair of shin pads. And they were a pair of Rukinor shin pads that I wore from about P5 to about, I don't know, probably my postgraduate, you know, life at university. I had these shin pads for ages. But Rukinor was all the rage, apparently.
Well, it wasn't much of a time for commercialism. But yeah, it was a good first Celtic Rangers game to get up to. When was the first time you went? Have you been to Ibrox? Actually, I was going to say, when was the first time you've seen a Celtic Rangers game at Ibrox?
Well, that wasn't until 1993. That was Lou McCarrie's first game. When we won that one as well, when Brian O'Neill scored in the last minute, which again was, you know, out of the ordinary, because that Rangers had a really good team then. That was the season when they nearly got to the European Cup final, and that was I was definitely with my mate that day, and that was unbelievable, because that was so unexpected, because Rangers scored first, McCoist, surprise scored in the second half, 1-0. Oh, that's that then. Then we came back and beat them. Ali Maxwell chucked the first one in the back of the net, and they didn't make a very good job of the second one. So my first game at Parkhead was a good result, and then Ibrox as well. But again, that was a one bright spot in a pretty grim era. So that was when I started to go home and away a lot then as well. And oh, dearie me, under Lou McCarrie, oh God, terrible. Awful, but character forming, I find, you know.
Yeah. Then, do you know what? I can't stand the phrase Celtic da, because I've earned the right to be patronising to people who are getting their knickers in a twist just now. You know, that character forming.
Well, I feel like you're not allowed to talk about it. You know what I mean? But I can't say when I went back then, they were rubbish. You're not allowed to talk about that, because that makes you a Celtic da.
But I just don't know, as opposed to a Celtic diehard who has been through the shite and can't be asked from people. There's nothing worse than in the middle of the nine in a row that we've just done, and we draw with somebody, and you'd hear someone walking out the ground going, that is the worst Celtic team I've ever seen. And you'd just turn around, you'd look and go, you look older than me. So unless you've only just started going to the game, that's just a big fat lie. That's a pale of shite you just said. Yeah. Because we've seen a lot worse. I always remember, you're talking about Lou McCarrie, I always remember Charlie Nicholls when he came back. He wasn't impressed with Lou McCarrie. He said he was on the park and he heard this whistling sound above his head going backwards and forwards, and he suddenly realised that was the ball.
Well, it was Charlie at that time. It was Charlie and Frank McAvaney up front together, but between them, there were about 6 to 8 between them. I mean, it was ridiculous, really, when you think about it. But
yeah. Quick mention of the substitutes in this game. Stephen Fulton comes on. Young gun, Baggio.
Baggio, yeah.
Andy Walker comes on for Jerry Craney. And it seems to suggest that, oh yeah, this guy was good at the centenary season, and has done hee-haw since, but maybe he'll return to form.
I mean, Craney and Coyne were a good partnership, and then, like I say, Charlie Nicholas, between the three of them, more under Liam Brady, I think the three of them played pretty well together. I Walker was already being kind of phased out by then. He probably left maybe in that summer.
I think he did. His performances then, and anybody who hung out for them then, remind me of Sinanthony of our site talking about Lee Griffiths just now. You know, he's not had a good season for four seasons, apart from, you know, there's the odd bit where he scores a couple of goals.
You see the flashes of what he used to be like.
So, anyway, so that was your first game. Since you're a lucky omen, you should come back up from London. Celtic should sponsor you, just to attend Celtic Rangers games.
I'd happily let them. That would be good. I'd definitely tie myself up.
Well, with that, what song? Was there any particular song? No, they don't play songs over the tannoy. I was going to say, what song could I stick on the end of the podcast that was in the charts at that time?
There was the other ones at that.
My vote's for Rod Stewart, James. By the way.
What's that?
Let's
just go for Rod Stewart.
Right, okay. Rhythm of the Heart. The Green Brigade don't listen to this anyway, so... with that, I'll see you, Kevin. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Next time on The Game, Lawrence Donegan will be discussing this match with Mark and I.
said.